Like notes through the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and somebody who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs, the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Wendy Eisenberg, Shane Parrish, Sarah Hennies, Maurice, the list goes on. But this week, so excited to have Ava Mendoza on the show. Ava has been one of my favorite guitarists for a long time. Somebody who plays with such a, like, there's this like pure visceral edge to her work, and it's just like rife with so much emotion and ferocity. And even in the like sort of quieter, more gentle moments, there's something that just grabs you. I'm a huge fan. Her new album is called The Circular Train. It is out now. It's been out for a month or two. It's incredible. It's one of my favorite things she's done, because it takes all the things that I love that have always drawn me to her work, and you get that, but then there's other, like, she shows new sides to it, and kind of, there's even parts where it sort of elevates some of it. I don't know. It's a hell of a record. And of course she plays in the Bill Orcutt Guitar Quartet. As mentioned, Wendy Eisenberg, Shane Parrish, and Ava have now been on this show. So now I just got to get Bill on. But, so that's 2025 goals. So Bill, if you hear this, I'm coming for you. But yeah, Ava rules. Been trying to get an interview for Foxy for a couple of years now, and it just, you know, life happens, things happen. So I was really glad we were able to make this happen kind of over the holidays when we both had a little bit of downtime, and she's about to head back out on the road a bunch and be doing a bunch of stuff. So it worked out. So Ava rules. You got to hear a new album. And before we get into it, just want to say thanks everybody for listening to the show, supporting the show. If you are a fan, if you enjoy this, please, please, please leave a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts, because that stuff really helps get this in more people's ear holes. And that's a good thing, right? And if you really like the show and you've been listening for a while, you just like the work Foxy D does, Foxy Digitalis has a Patreon, patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis. That support means everything. You can also do one-time donations through Ko-Fi. The Jewel Garden is our in-house label, all those things. But, you know, this takes time to do, costs money to do, and that ongoing support means everything. So everybody who has signed up, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And yeah, I'll stop shilling for that, because it feels a little weird, but sometimes you can do it. Anyway, Ava Mendoza, she's the best, and this episode rules, so I hope you enjoy it. My guest today is a musician, a songwriter, an activist, a member of Bill Orcutt's Guitar Quartet. You are the third member I've had on here. Now I just got to get Bill on here.
Nice.
And one of my favorite guitar players in the world, and frankly, one of the best, it is Ava Mendoza.
Woo! Yay! Thank you, Brad. It means a lot from you.
Thank you for coming on. I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad we finally have made this happen, because we were going to do an interview when your last record came out. And life happens.
And I'm glad you could bear with and we fit
now. I was glad that you got, I kind of forgot about that, and then you got in touch when this record came out. I was like, ooh, I got an even better idea. So here we are. But speaking of that record, The Circular Train, which is a really cool title, by the way, what is the story behind the name?
Well, it I could go on for a long time about this, but basically a lot of the music on the record feels cyclical to me. That's part of it. But also a lot of it was written on the road, like either on car trips or train trips or plane trips and airports. And I think of it as like, in a way, like riding music, whether that's driving or, or being on a train or whatever, but it's in motion music where you're kind of like looking at a landscape and it's throwing all these images at you and you're thinking about its people and its animals and its history. And that's where the lyrics came from. And that's where a lot of the actual music came from, was road trips and tours. And so the circular train, like there's a, with the LP, there's actually a map that comes with it.
Nice.
And it's like a, of five, well, it's six tracks on the record and there's five locations on the map that are like each tied into a song.
Okay.
And those are like, some of them are things in my family, like in Bolivia, there's a couple of places, that are, that have like a bunch of family history that inspired some of the music. And then some of them are to do with the songs themselves. Like I do a cover of Goodnight Irene on this record. Right. And so Shreveport, Louisiana is on the map because that's where Leadbelly is from.
Who right.
made, you know, he didn't write it, but he made it famous first.
Right.
So there's an actual map of a train route that comes with the LP.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it just all kind of came together as that concept.
That makes a lot of sense. So the first time I actually listened to this, like I was on a hike and I was listening to my headphones. And so saying like, it's an album, like it's an, for like in motion album makes a lot of sense to me like that. Yeah, that's cool. I only have that makes me want to get the record, 'cause I want to see the map. That's really cool. I love that.
I'll send you the digital insert.
Okay. There we go. Cool. I'm curious, like what, so I don't want to say like this archive is like a departure for you. That feels weird, but like there's unexpected, like when I listened to it, there were unexpected moments and stuff. And the vocals were one thing, and you may tell me like, oh, I've done vocals a lot and my memory sucks, but it surprised me in the best way.
Sure. Sure.
Is that a new thing for you? Like,
it's not new. It's not new, but I feel the best about it on this record.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I did with Unnatural Ways. There are some vocals on our first record, and then there's vocals all over the last record, The Paranoia Party. And that's like more, you know, it's like a heavy rock band. So the vocals sit in the mix differently than they do on the Circular Train, a solo guitar and vocals record. But yeah, I've been singing for I guess a decade, you know, it's definitely a guitar player first, far and beyond being a singer, but singing and writing lyrics is something I've done for the last decade or so. And on this record, Circular Train, I knew I wanted it to just be something that popped up here and there, like on a couple of tracks, and that just came together on its own, where the music, I wrote a lot more music than I wrote lyrics, and it turned out to be two vocal songs.
Yeah.
So it's fair to be surprised, but there are records in the past where I've sung.
Okay. Yeah. I think like I was thinking about the, I mean, this is like totally different, but that the duo record you did with Gabby a couple of years ago, I don't remember. 2 years, what's time, dude? I don't know. But like that's what a record I return to a lot, just because like both of y'all are two of my favorites. So and anyway, I'm ADHD brain is like, so I'm like, don't go down there. what was the hardest thing making this record?
God. You know, the actual recording process was a challenge because I wanted to do it from home. I love recording from home in certain ways, but it's also a challenge. And somehow getting the sounds that I wanted on these songs was more of a challenge, I think, than on like New Spells, which was my previous solo record.
Right.
For whatever reason. maybe I was just fussier about what I wanted on this record, but like, you know, I record, I have a couple different preamps that I use, and then I go into my interface, and then I'm going into Pro Tools, and yeah, just getting the guitar sound where I was happy with it was a bit of a challenge. And then that made it where I would like do an hour of recording and then go back and be like, this sound sucks, I'm going to redo everything, and like,
God,
just the preamp, or I'm not going to use the preamp, blah, 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 all this stuff. So I would say the recording process was the biggest challenge.
I have this problem where I get so like, I will obsess over, like, I have like a sound in my head, you know, like, or like I want something to sound like this and I can't get it. And I'll play like, I'll have somebody, I need to bounce it off somebody, but like, okay, just listen to these. And everyone's like, dude, these sound the same. Like, what are you?
Totally.
And I get so, I have a hard time. I can get really bogged down in that. So I will say, however long it took you, it paid, like, I think it sounds great. So
that's nice to hear. I have like I have those people in my life, but then also I have Gabby in my life. Like, I'll record it and be like, okay, example is I got this preamp, this, what is it called? Dream 65 reverb amp. It's supposed to sound like a 65 deluxe reverb. Bill Orca recommended it to me, and you know, he records straight into his computer using preamps quite a bit, and I like his tone, so I consulted him. He recommended this thing, and I recorded a couple tracks with it and played it back for Gabby, and of course Gabby's like, absolutely not, like, this doesn't sound like you sound I think the first thing they said was, this sounds like a guitarist. What the well, how do I interpret that?
Wow.
This sounds like a guitarist, not like you. So it was what my partner said to me. So I was like, all right, I don't know how to interpret that, but I'm listening. I love that.
That sounds like a real compliment, but I totally understand. Like, that's like, wait.
I think it was like, it sounded too guitar center, you
yeah.
know?
Like, oh,
check out this sick guitar tone kind of thing. And
right. That's interesting. Like, I mean, I don't do a lot with guitar anymore, and I've never used like preamp, or so I'm like really curious about if I ever start making guitar music again, but like I don't know. I mean, I'm really curious about all, like, there's so much stuff that exists out there that I don't know about, like,
right.
Like, and you telling me that Bill records, like, kind of blows my mind, because his records, I mean, your record sounds great, and hearing you say that kind of blew my mind. Like, it makes me realize, oh man, there's, okay, because it sounds like you're in a room, or like, that's really, yeah, I don't know.
That's nice to hear. To be fair, there were some tracks that I recorded like in a studio with amps mic'd at my friend Eli Cruz's studio, Spillway Sound. So there are some tracks that are like real, you know, and not direct in. And in retrospect, I wouldn't change a thing. But this record did make me think, okay, next record, I'm just gonna either record myself using mics on an amp. Mm-hmm. Or go into a studio. Like, I don't want to deal with the process of going straight in anymore.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that's I'm learning all sorts of new things. Real quick, I mean, we mentioned Bill, and like, I love Bill. I think Bill makes some of the best music in the world.
Me too.
How fun is it being in the quartet?
Oh, it's great. It's great. I mean, it's like, I think for all of us, it's like guitar therapy. It's like we enable each other. And we can just go down these wormholes of guitar nerddom, but it's also really like great people who can go there and sort of get nerdy about strings and gear and technique and everything, but they're not like, it doesn't have to go there all the time.
Right.
They're not weird and catty and competitive about it.
Right.
Like, just kind of kid in a candy store vibe. Yeah. Four kids in four candy stores. It's very fun.
That's awesome. It's like, whenever I first heard about it, it's like, oh my god, these are like four of my favorite guitar players, and you all, like, I don't know, to me it's like y'all are so different, but the way it comes together is cool as hell. So
cool. Thank you.
what You mentioned this record was made on the road. You seem to be on the road a lot last year.
Yes.
are you gonna be in the road? What's 2025 shaping up like?
I'm gonna be on the road quite a bit. The next 2 months, thankfully, are more chill. I'm at home quite a bit. Other than next month, I have some gigs with a new quartet with Mark Rebo, in New England.
Yeah.
But then March through July, I'm out quite a bit. And that's like partly with Rebo's band, which mm-hmm. is called Hurry Red Telephone. And that's Rebo and Chad Taylor and Sebastian Steinberg and me.
Nice.
And then with the Bill band and a bit solo, I'm going to Brazil solo in.
Oh, rad.
Yeah, excited about that. And then the Bill band, Bach, we call it Bach because it's Bill Work guitar quartet.
Love
it. Is going to China for this festival in Shenzhen in May. And just kind of all over the place. The Rebo band is doing more in July, I think. So I'm going for that
right.
punk, March through July. And then a bit more of a break after that.
Wow. And all over the place. God, Brazil, China. That's awesome.
Yeah, though. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Hey, that's the life, right? Okay. Well, I don't have any good segue here, so we're just gonna get into it.
Let's do it.
Whole reason we're here, you could say. So as ever, first question gonna start with, what is the first song you remember?
So the first song I remember is it is the first song I remember, but also I've been told that when I was in the womb, I danced this song.
Nice.
Like dancing being like, you know, my parents would put the song on and my mom would start to feel these bumps.
Yeah.
So I don't remember that, but I do remember it from a very young age, like as a toddler. It's called Danza del Sicuri, the dance of the Sicuri. And there's different versions, but I think Savia Andina is the band that was around mm-hmm. the most, or the version that was around the most. And there's also one called Sukai, this other band. They're two Andean bands.
Okay.
And like that, I was born in 83. And at that time there was like this kind of a wave of like Andean music that came to the States.
Yeah, I remember there was like, I was born in 79, so I don't remember like in the early 80s, but I do remember this like pan flute sort of.
It was everywhere all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like Inti Illimani was another one. This uh-huh. like kind of like virtuosic, like
right.
one. But yeah, Savia Andina and Sukai and Inti Illimani were just like on constant rotation in my house. And Danza del Sicuri is this one that's like, it's based on a dance that happens in Carnival every year in Bolivia. And the dance is like, it's about hunting this bird called a suri, which is like, it's like a emu or an ostrich.
Oh, okay.
It's not either one.
Right.
Anyway, it lives in Bolivia and it's about hunting this bird. And the dance is like imitating the bird.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. Like, yeah, I mean, it has such a, The thing that kept coming, like the groove to it's like this, it's, I don't know, it feels like this very welcoming song. Like it just kind of wraps around you. It's really amazing.
Yeah. And it has a speed up, you know, it starts slow and speeds up. And I think as a toddler, I was like, well, that, you know, I get that.
Right. gotta work up to it.
Yeah. I'm trying to stand up right now and like right. take steps like this. This makes sense.
was there like a lot of music and stuff around growing up?
I mean, that stuff was around quite a bit. So my dad's side is Bolivian and my mom's side is American.
Okay.
He's from Montana. And so there was this like confluence of different music around, but a lot of Latin American music, not just Andean, but like Afro-Cuban and Afro-Peruvian. And then classical music. And like some cult, like 50s Coltrane and Miles. kind
of stuff cool.
was around. So yeah, I was lucky, you know, yeah. they were music lovers. They weren't like going to be listening to like late Coltrane or something like that, but they were somewhat open-minded and like loved a lot of different kinds of music.
Yeah. That's cool. That's like quite, it's like a really interesting mix of different things too. So that's like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, what is the song that either it'll make you cry or makes you feel that kind of way if it doesn't actually make you cry?
Right. So Skip James is somebody in general who I like have to really be careful when I listen to him because it just like pushes the cry button in me.
Same.
Yeah, and I love him, so it's kind of hard because I want to listen to him in a way.
Right.
But I'm like, I don't want to go there right now. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, a lot of his songs, but especially like Hard Time Killing Floor and Devil Got My Woman, it's uncontrollable. I'm just like, as soon as it comes on.
I couldn't, like, when I was prepping for this and saw, I was like, all right, I'm not listening to those right now. Like, I know those songs so well. I was like, I can't, like you said, I can't go there right now. Like, I mean, yeah, like Hard Time Killing Floor, like, that's like one of the best greatest songs ever written. And
totally. And what's not to cry about in there?
Right. I mean, the whole thing, it's just, yeah. If you're ever in a spot where you know, sometimes you feel like you need to cry, people just go put that song on and that'll like push you over the edge.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
It's like kind of annoying actually, because when I got into that stuff, I was like 19. And I went and like learned a bunch of his songs in standard tuning, and like Devil Got My Woman. But he plays it at different periods of his life in standard and in a different tuning that he used all the time. And I like kind of want to go back and get it in a different tuning, but I don't want to spend the time. Like, that's gonna be an unsolved mystery of, you know, guitar.
God, no kidding. That'd be, yeah, I can just imagine. It's like you're sitting there trying to like learn this thing, just weeping.
Yeah. Shit. Man, is it worth it?
I know. Devil Got My, I mean, the way he sings on Devil Got My, like that, because he's like in that falsetto like the whole time.
Yeah.
Just like adds another layer to it. That, again, just like thinking about it right now, I'm like, oh, okay. Don't think about it too much because I can hear it.
One thing that's interesting about him too is I didn't really realize for a long time what a school he was part of, like from Bentonia, because he's from this part of Mississippi that's south of the Delta, Bentonia, right. And it's not like it's not Delta. You know, it's not the same landscape. It's more like, I guess, wooded. And there's this sort of school of guitar players and singers that came out of there that they all sound, there's a sound, you know, and it's very similar to Skip James. Like the father of that school is Henry Stuckey. Maybe there was somebody before that, but that's the first person that I've been able to hear about. And then Skip James and Jack, what's that guy's name? Jack Owens was like a contemporary of Skip James who never got quite as famous, but like outlived him by a long time.
Oh, wow.
And now there's this guy, Jimmy Duck Holmes, that is still doing it and still playing a lot of the same songs that Skip James played, but, you know, with his own style. And there really is like this Bentonia sound.
That's cool.
Yeah. See, I
didn't know that. This is why I love doing this, because I've like, all right, got know what I'm gonna do after that. I'm gonna go start reading and listening, but learning, because that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. No one sounds quite like him, but there's definitely like a school.
Yeah, well, and it's like just mentioning that, like, because you know, yeah, like it's he, because I don't know any of the other artists you mentioned, which I'm excited to check him out, but just he does have his, like, when I think of a lot of other like music from that period, or like, you know, like Delta blues or whatever, he doesn't sound like that.
yeah. I mean, and the, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, that was what I was gonna say. So it's interesting, like hearing that it's a thing.
Yeah. So his falsetto is something that I don't hear the other people do, but like, okay. the tunings and the guitar style and the like haunting sort ofness of the vocals, it is like that's across the board.
Well, and it's that like that part of it, the haunt, like haunting is a really good adjective. Like that is what I think of Skip Jan. Like so that's like one of the words that always comes to mind because it is, there is this, I don't know, like this feeling of like it's this ghost singing to me or something. I don't know. I mean, it's so because it's like this ageless thing.
Yeah.
And so I will, I mean, also probably sounds like I need to mentally prepare myself to really go down that rabbit hole because that, but yeah. Okay. Well, on the other side of it, what's this, what'll put you in a better mood?
Okay. So this one is, can actually answer either the crying one or the better mood. Truth is Marching In by Albert Eiler. It could go either way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a profoundly happy, profoundly sad song to me. And it's just, no, it's a deep tune. And it, it's hard to describe. It feels good.
It's literally what I have written here. I'm like, I don't really know what to say about this other than like, when people wonder why I love Eiler so much, it's like, here, listen to this.
Right. And you're like ecstatic and crying.
Yeah. I don't know how, I can't think of many people who are able to, convey this sort of duality at once.
Yes, totally.
And it seems, because I don't know, I feel like a lot of times when I listen to him and it's like catharsis and profound sadness or something, and it's like, how are you doing this at the same time? It's amazing.
So Rock can be like that to me.
That's yes. Oh god. Whew. Yeah.
Okay, so this one I have two, because there's one that's actually just a feel-good song. And and that's Kid Congo Powers and the Pink Monkey Birds, like Kid Congo Powers' current band. Ese vicio delicioso.
It's so good.
It's so good.
I want to live like in the world that this song creates. I mean, thinking of like one of the things that I really like, I mean, there's so many things that I like about it, but when I was listening to it again this morning, like all the different guitar layers like are really cool. Like, you know, it's like there's like that distorted kind of lead thing, and then there's the more kind of like groovy fun, like I don't know, the way it's all put together is so, it just kind of makes it, it ups that like feel good factor.
right. I think I heard it for the first time because I hadn't really listened to their records, but I saw them play over the summer at Union Pool, and it was a great show. And from there I started listening to stuff. And the show that I saw, and I think this is what they're still doing as far as I know, is it was Mark Cisneros on like Barry guitar and sometimes guitar, and then Kid on guitar, and then just a drummer. There was no bass.
Oh, wow. That's a cool setup.
Yeah. And it sounded great. And like you're saying about the layers of guitar and just the guitar sort of chemistry, Mark and Kid were so nice together. And like had really clear kind of roles they both did, but really like complemented each other.
And there's something too, for me, like music where it just sounds like they're having a great time.
Yeah.
And speaking of, like, that's the kind of music that puts me in a better mood. It's like, man, they love this. And that makes me love this. And I don't know, like joy, like joyfulness is such, it can be like a really hard emotion to convey through music in a way that's not sort of cheesy, I guess, which I can go for cheesy, don't get me wrong.
But sure, like, no, me too.
This is a different kind of thing. I don't know. I would love to see them live.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, Kid just seems like, looking at him, you're like, this person's having the time of his life. Like it seems really genuine, and like it's really contagious.
Yeah, that's a really good, yes, that's the word. Okay. All right, well, here's everybody's favorite song, or not song, favorite question. It's whatever. What's objectively the greatest song of all time?
I can't answer that. I'm not comfortable answering that, but I do think so. The Blind Willie music that was sent into space in the 70s, I think maybe it was multiple songs, but I know that Dark Was the Night, Cold Was the Ground, one of the songs.
Yeah.
That was sent into space by NASA. And this is, I'm not a Race for Space person. There's not a lot of like NASA decisions where I'm like, this is one thing I really agree with. I'm like, that is a solid decision to, that's a good song to show alien life what a person is.
Yeah. Yeah. to the space thing, like, this is a song to me that sounds like it was like dug out of the soil.
Like, sure.
And I love the idea. And it's because it's like, I don't know, like there's the way he like sings it. And then just like it's like this very skeletal thing that has so much gravity.
Yeah. And it's simple, but you're also like, what is he doing?
Yeah. It's like, I'm not a religious person, but to me, it's like, if I discovered this in space, this would be like seeing God or something.
Like, sure. And I would, if I were an alien who was on the fence about humanity, like, are they awful? They're burning each other. Like, what are they doing?
Is there anything worth saving down there?
Yeah. If I heard that song, I'd be like, let's give them a chance. There's something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that. It's a great answer. All right. Well, what's a song you used to love, but now, like, if you heard it recently, you think about it now and it doesn't quite click, doesn't really do it for you.
Right. There's a lot of metal that I used to love that I don't, it's not that I don't love it, but I don't listen to it as much anymore. And I think like, okay, this is a very like general answer, but at some point I realized that for my own sound and the way that I write, there's something that gets lost in a super heavy rock band, because I do hear things really like melodically in a certain way. And because I like having a little bit more of an old school tone.
Yeah.
But so I'm also not going to answer this question. the things that have stuck with me out of that world are still really near and dear to me. And like one of those is the band Virus.
Okay.
From like a Norwegian kind of like coming out of black metal band. And that it's the guy that leads that, Kral or like Carl Michael Ida. He's had a bunch of bands like Vedbuen's Ende and Aura Noir, but Virus is like, I don't know, kind of the one I guess that I've spent most time with. And his singing is, I don't know. Have you heard them?
No, not until I listened to it about an hour ago. Yeah. like not a world I'm familiar with.
Yeah, sure. So. Well, so he. Again, this I'm sort of not answering the question and also saying the opposite.
Yeah, that's fair. Hey,
but like his singing is so special because it's kind of like it's like Scott Walker or something more than
that was. That's metal. Literally what I wrote here. It was like if Scott Walker was in a metal band.
Yeah,
kind of
yeah.
thing. Which Scott Walker is like, you know, one of my favorites ever. So it made me interested in this.
Right. And then his guitar playing, I think in a way it is super melodic. Like he has these, I think really, really incredible, like substantial riffs he writes. And it's like as much coming out of kind of something like Sonic Youth or something as it is out of metal. So that's one that has really stayed with me. And then the other is Earth, like Dylan Carlson and
yeah.
his solo stuff and some Earth records. Those are ones that have stuck around and like, you know, what's it called? Bees Made Honey in the Lion's Skull is like,
absolutely. That's like, yeah, that's one of those things that I've been listening to for a long time. Like that part, which I guess, you know, that's metal. I don't, like, it's hard to even call it metal.
Right.
And like, so I mean I've that's been around in my life for a long time and I can still put it on anytime. Like that record in particular and that track in particular too. Like it's
yeah.
It's got it's like I'm a real sucker for things that have like this sort of epic melodicism to it, and I feel like this, like his guitar playing on there's just that lead thing is so, it's like light cutting through the darkness or something. It's so
sure.
I love it.
And it's so Bill Frisell is on that record, and he's like, he brings what he brings to it.
Yeah. You know,
it's like this beautiful clean tone.
Right.
I just lost you for a second and then I found you again. Okay.
Oh.
But yeah, he brings this beautiful, like more clean tone, soaring.
Yeah.
This thing to it.
Yeah, no, I like that you turned that question around. I'm all here for it. This is, you know, this isn't that serious. There's not any real rules here. okay. Well, what's a song that people hate, but you don't care. You love it. Whoever these people are. I don't know.
Yeah. This song is like, so, it's divisive.
No, okay.
People love it or hate it, but Nicki Minaj, Stupid Ho, which is, what record is it on? It's on the one with, it's on like I can't even remember the name of the one it's on.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
it's just funny, you know, but it's like,
right.
You put it on and half the tour van like wants to jump out the window and the other half is like, this is the best.
It's like, it's totally into it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a diss song, right? And it's just like, right. So, she's so funny and she like,
I know
the lyrics are great. And I just think she's a badass, you know,
yeah.
Performer and rapper and everything. But yeah, so that separates the wheat from the chaff, whoever it is maybe.
I can, yeah, I'm like imagining the quartet in the van and this coming on. And
you know, I haven't ever done that.
I feel like that needs to happen, Ava. And I'm just mostly just because I'm curious what Bill would think of Nicki Minaj.
Yeah, you know, I feel like he might be entertained, but then,
I think he might be too.
Yeah, but like the second time I put it in on here, you're like, no.
Yeah, like once it would be fine, but
yeah.
I love it. And I feel like, well, anyway, because I've had Wendy and Shane on the show, I feel like right. Wendy would be all would on board.
Yeah. Shane would dig it the first time again. Yeah, maybe maybe it's the second time that separates the wheat.
So. I can also imagine like you talk to Shane a few months later and he's transcribed it for guitar. So.
Totally. Like, I get it back in like a bad back.
God. Shane, if you're listening, please. Please. Okay, well. If it's not Stupid Ho, what is the most romantic song?
Yeah, different.
Yeah.
This is like guitar dadville, but in terms of instrumental guitar music, Roy Buchanan's Sweet Dreams is one to me where like, I mean, his playing is kind of romantic in general,
mm-hmm.
I think, but yeah, he does such a beautiful version of Sweet Dreams and everything he's doing with the volume knob and all the harmonics and everything and the spazzy shreddy that he works in there. I really love that.
Yeah, it's really, there's something like really sweet about this version of, I don't know, like it's like sweet and then but there's also this like sense of longing in it too, which he somehow melds without ever saying a word and without, you know, it's, I don't know, it's there's something kind of, I don't know, when I think about it, it's like, it's kind of, there's something kind of astonishing about this guy. It's dang.
Yeah.
Like, how did he pull this off?
He's amazing. And to me, he's like this really important kind of like connection from country. I mean, he's as much a blues player as a country player, I think, mm-hmm. but there's really important connection between that and avant-garde playing,
yeah.
which, although I don't know that he knew what an avant-garde was, you know? But it's like all the harmonics and like behind the nut bends and stuff that he's doing, it's extended technique
right.
for like country / blues guitar. And he's like a master at it.
Yeah.
And then he really like, to me, he's part of this lineage too, where like Robert Quine really, really loved him. Robert Quine, who is, you know, played with Richard Hell and the Voivods and, Voidoids.
I was with you. I was like, wait, no, it's not quite. Yeah.
I want to hear that band.
Yes, but... I do too, actually.
We played with Richard Hell and with Lou Reed and Brian Eno. But Robert Quine is one of my favorite sort of like that type of guitar player, like no wave punk rock guitar player. But he really loved Roy Buchanan. And I think you can hear that.
I didn't know that. I'm going to have to go back and listen and think about that. That's really cool.
It's so nerdy, but yeah, I read some interview with him where he said when he was in his 30s or something, he locked himself in a room for a month with a bunch of Roy Buchanan records. And he came out sort of having better melodic control and being able to do all the awesome like noise stuff that he does, but with more control over the note choices. I think there's like a really like this continuum that starts right. From Roy Buchanan that I really love.
That's awesome. All right, what's a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
This is the one it's the trio of Keiji Haino, Jim O'Rourke, and Oren Ambarchi. And I wanted to go and figure out which record this was because they have many records and I can't remember which one this is. But I remember listening to it in like 2022, I believe. Maybe 2021. And so I love Keiji Haino, like kind of fanatically, but I haven't heard him sing in English where I can understand the words.
Right.
Much and yeah. It seems like he's doing that more, or at least I'm hearing it more in the last decade. And so this record was the first time I heard him do that. And the only lyrics that I really remember, he's like, "Be bright, be bright, be bright, be bright."
I think I know what you're talking. I know what you're talking about. I can't think of which record that is either. But yeah. I remember. I know. Like I can hear it, and because I too am a Keiji Haino fanatic. Probably like if someone made me pick like who is the one artist that you want to listen to, it'd probably be either him or somebody else that's going to come up later, but and are about as opposite as you could get. But like I hope that man is immortal. I think he might be.
Hearing him sing in English for the first time where I could really understand the words, my first reaction was like, no! Because I love his voice and his vocalizing, and I've never understood a word before. Right. I like his song titles, you know, it's like a paragraph of of words in English a lot of the time. But hearing him sing in understandable English was like shocking. And my first reaction was dislike. but I got used to it and was like, okay, actually this is great. But it was a shock to hear like him say something that was a little bit more concrete to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's still super abstract, is that he's saying like, be bright.
Right. No, but I know what you mean, because it's like, like you said, I don't know a single word of, I've listened to Keiji Haino for over half my life now, and it never mattered. And so it is weird when it's like, oh God, wait, it's shocking.
Yeah. I like it now. You know, but that first reaction was just like, oh, my heroes are dead. Like, he's mortal. He's
not right. Oh, man. Have you ever met him?
Yeah. Yeah. I played a festival that he and Merzbow and Tatsuya Yoshida were playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was staying in the same hotel, probably with all of them. But I kept seeing him and Merzbow wander around the hotel together. And they were like both wearing long leather coats and like had no color in their faces. And I was like, they're immortal.
I know. Right.
I followed them into the dining hall and watched, and they ate. And I was like, they eat. but I did meet him briefly after he played, and you know, just said thank you for your music, and he was nice.
Yeah, I I think I did an episode last year with Ben Chasney, and Chasney's a huge kaiju freak too, and he told me about I'd never seen it. There's a video on YouTube. It's somebody who lived in New York back in like the 80s and 90s and recorded a bunch of shows and stuff and put them up on YouTube. There's this one of Kaiji Hano is at Lauren Connor's apartment and listening, like Lauren is playing for Kaiji.
Oh wow.
And it's like, it's the most surreal, cool thing ever.
Yeah.
And it's just out there on YouTube, just for anybody to go watch.
Will you send me that?
Yeah, I'll find it. And because it's like, he's just sitting there in this armchair. And Lauren, and I think it was Lauren and Suzanne. Maybe they played like a duo set. I can't remember now. But it was like one of those things of like, oh my God, like two of my heroes in the same room, which isn't.
Right. They used to play together.
It's like really cool to see this like thing that no one's really ever seen. I don't know. Well, maybe that's weird. I don't know. Maybe people shouldn't see it, but it seemed pretty innocuous.
No, I'd love to see that.
Anyway, I could do like a whole thing. I could just talk about Kaiji Hano for. So sure. I'm gonna stop. So, what are your favorite lyrics? Is it Be Bright? I'm just
kidding. Yeah, now I've come around. Well, I'm gonna. This is really hard for me too, because there's so many. There's a lot to choose from, right?
Yeah, right.
But I'll say two lyricists who I love, who I'm biased because I work with both of them, but I've spent a lot of time with their lyrics because of that. Malcolm Mooney, who's the first singer of Can, and then Carla Bozulich, who was the singer of the Geraldine Fibbers and Scarnella, this duo with Nels Klein. And I think both of them are just like fantastic lyricists.
Yeah. Carla, God, Carla's made so many incredible like solo records.
I was trying to say the not solo bands that she's in, but of course, Evangelista,
right,
and records under her own name that she's made.
Okay, do you have not necessarily favorite lyrics of there? Because it's hard. Like song, like favorite song, or off the top of your head.
Yeah.
Songs by either of them. I'm mainly asking to when I make the playlist for this.
So Carla Richard is a good one, and that's the Geraldine Fibbers.
Okay. Yeah. That is a good one.
And then Malcolm, Father Cannot Yell.
Okay. Man, I haven't heard that in a minute.
Yeah.
I'm excited to listen to it. Yeah, those are good. Lyrics are hard. Like, are you like a big lyrics person? Like,
I am. I mean, it's funny because there's so many musicians that are like, I don't listen to lyrics, it's like kind of astonishing to me how many like great musicians, and sometimes they're great at playing with singers, but they pay very little attention to the lyrics. And that's, I think that's beautiful actually, that they're reacting to something else, or they're reacting to the something in the singer's voice, or, and not the actual words that are being said. But I'm not like that. I've always loved lyrics, and, you know, as a kid, I would sit there with lyric sheets and
same.
Puzzle over what things meant. And, I love them, and I love writing lyrics.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I wrote lyrics, and I've been thinking about that the last while. Ever since I started doing this show and talking more about lyrics, I was like, God, I do miss writing lyrics. I don't know what a project with lyrics for me would look like, but I don't know. Maybe 2025 will be the year. Who the hell knows?
Right. Because it could be you who vocalizes them, or it could be somebody else.
Right. Yeah. Which might be better for everybody. although my wife and I, we have a band. Like, we haven't put out a record since 2012 because we had a kid, and then that made it really hard.
Right. The kid.
Sing on that sometimes. So I'm like, maybe I could. I don't know. Feels like a lifetime ago. Anyway, nobody cares. Okay.
moving into the. I care, Brad.
Well, thanks. I'm glad at least one person does. All right. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
I have three competitors.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But. Top of the list is Turiya sings, like kind of anything on that record, the Alice Coltrane record.
The original?
The remix where it's
just the organ?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's what I'm most familiar with. And okay. I like the original too, but I got wind of it when that remix came.
Gotcha.
That's what I'm most familiar
gotcha.
With. Yeah. And so just the depth of the organ sound and her voice, and again, not being able to understand the lyrics, I love. But I just think it's some of the best music out there.
Couldn't agree more. When I was saying if there was it's either Kaiji Hano or like Alice Coltrane. Those are my two, which like I feel like are like the two opposite ends of, you know, it's like, I don't know.
I think there's a lot in common though.
Yeah, like I think they do too. Like I think they come at some similar ideas from like different sides.
Yeah.
In a way, which is, I think it's probably why both of them, their work speaks to me like so much. And I can I love Alice Coltrane so much. Like, and Turiya Sings is like, yeah, I'm like the reissue. I like it a lot. Like I don't have an actual copy of the original tape, but I have like a copy of the, like, a dubbed copy of it, and I've had it for a long time, and it's been my favorite Alice Coltrane thing.
Yeah.
And I like it. Like, I miss like the synths and the strings, and it kind of bumps me out that I hope that they somehow reissue that version someday too. But like, I love having a new, like, anytime there's like a new thing of Alice Coltrane's, especially that's done, like, it's not just some random people bootlegging it, you know, like, it's actually her son in her estate working on it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like, I'm like, yes, give us that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I love her in general, but I think that one is not being familiar with it before I heard the reissue. To me, hearing her in that stripped down context, that it's really minimal, but also the organ is really noisy.
I know.
In this awesome way. So it's like, to me, it does have a lot in common with Keiji Haino in a certain way, even though it's not loud guitar noise and coming from rock like him. But it has that juxtaposition of like how tender her voice is and tender a lot of her playing is, but then the like growl in the organ.
Yeah. Oh God. So what were the other two contenders?
anything on the first three, like Primetime Records or Next Moment's Primetime. I mean, I can just listen. I have listened to those on repeat.
Right.
Over and over forever. So that's like Dancing in Your Head, Body Meta, and Of Human Feelings. And
I've had like weeks where I literally listen to nothing else for those three. Like,
yeah.
There's never not a good time.
Agreed.
Agreed.
I was remembering, I actually thought about that one for the, I thought about reversing the, what's something that used to do it for you that doesn't anymore.
Oh.
I thought about reversing that because the Primetime Records are kind of like that for me. Like when I first heard them, I could take it or leave it. And then I got more into them the more I heard them.
Yeah. But I remember
first hearing them in like my early 20s and it sounded so shambly and directionless. I think it was like, I think it must've been Dancing in Your Head. Cause theme from a symphony. I was like, you know, this just feels like so many times. And, you know, it feels like your life is just stuck and suspended and it's directionless, blah, blah, blah. And then I got older and I was like, but that's what life is like. And it's beautiful, you know, it's like this meander kind of, and it doesn't have to be so like directed.
This is like a perfect example. So when I had Shane on the show and we were talking about in the Patreon section, like the song that people love that, you know, he was like, I don't like to say that like He's like, because I don't like something. He's like, I just say I don't have access to it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a perfect, is that like in your early 20s, you just didn't have access to it yet. And then you got, yeah. And it makes sense to me because they're like some of my favorite music in the world. When I first heard it, I was just like, I don't get this. And then years later, somehow it clicked. It was like, oh my God,
right.
This is, and I would say a lot of my favorite music is probably like that, that it took
For me too. There's something about it where I don't quotes like it right away, but right. I want to understand it, so I keep coming back.
Okay, what's the third one? I'm like dragging this out. I'm just curious. I'm curious.
Me too. Chrome, the record, Alien soundtracks. There's a bunch of songs. I mean, I can listen to that record over and over, but especially that one song, SS Signy, or Signa, or whatever. It's like the most kind of, you know, they were super influenced by Gnawa music, in this way that I think is really cool, because they're just such like acid damaged like
right
psyched out industrial dudes. They do totally their own thing with it, but that track to me is the most like Gnawa. From my perspective, not being deep into Gnawa, obviously.
Sure.
But it's the most like overtly that, and it's just so cool the way that it's cyclical and the way that interlocking rhythms work, and like, yeah, I could listen to it on repeat forever.
Yeah, Alien soundtracks is like one of my favorite records ever. So I'm right there with you. I've probably listened. I don't know what I've listened to the most, but yeah, this is something from Alien soundtracks is probably in the conversation, because I love that record so much. I'll put this when I do the show notes. One of my favorite things I ever published on Foxy Digitalis is Gary Spain, like, wrote an article about like Chrome and being in Chrome and when it's and starting and stuff.
Oh wow!
I don't even remember how that happened. Like, I think, but I yeah. So.
Oh, cool.
Like highlight of my publishing career is like, oh shit, one of my favorite bands writing for me ever. Okay.
Wow.
Well, that's three incredible pay. Okay. Damn. Alice, Ornette, and Chrome. Like, love it. Okay. What's the sexiest song?
So I went a lot to choose from here, but Cake's the Killer. There's a few songs on Hedonism, which is like 2015 or 2016, I think. There's like Keep It Going and Then That Did That, but there that whole record I feel like is it's like it has a thing. You know, like, he's great in general. I got to see him live during the pandemic at God, what was that place? I can't remember even what venue it was, but it was him opening for Big Frida. It was limited ticket sales because it was like 2021 or something, so there was nobody there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was maybe like 40 people at a 500 seat venue.
Holy crap.
And he just killed it. I thought he was great.
That's amazing. Wow. Yeah, there's something like, I was listening to Keep It Going, like, I don't remember my lessons, but yeah, there's something, it's like, there's like something that's kind of, it's like kind of dark, but it's also fun. Which to me is like, that is sexiness. It's like, there's, it's kind of this, it's like, I don't know, like, it feels a little dangerous. Like,
I mean, I think his beats are so awesome.
Oh my God.
I don't know exactly how much is him and how much is like collab, but.
Right.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. All right. Two last questions to go. The big ones. So what is the song that means the most to you?
Oh, so at the moment, this is kind of heavy, but The Winds of St. Anne by Carla Bozulich, because which is about the Santa Ana winds in LA, because she's from LA. I grew up around LA. So that's just been on my mind for the last few days with everything that's going on. And and she's a friend and, you know, I used to play together a lot, so that one. And I can't bring myself to listen to it because, again, it's like the Skip James thing where I'm like, I'm just gonna avoid that for a while, but that's been been, you know, on repeat mentally for the last few days.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that's really heavy. Shit.
I was like, should I go there? All right.
I mean, this is
what means the most right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very real. All right. Well, what is, at least at this moment in time, or maybe it's always, what's your favorite song?
This is the only one I didn't answer. I just can't. I don't know how to do that.
Hey,
I can't.
It's hard.
I mean, there's people that I haven't talked about that I like to talk about, like Sonny Chirac. I haven't said anything about. I don't know if I can say one of his songs is my favorite, but like he's like a favorite artist. There's maybe one of the things on Ask the Ages, you know, like Who Does She Hope to Be or something. Those are beautiful, like beautiful sort of free jazz kind of ballad writing. I don't know if I can say that that's my favorite song, but that's something I haven't mentioned that I feel like I should mention.
Yeah. Sonny, I mean, yeah, that's like, again, one of the greatest records ever made. So that's fair. You also had in your list, which didn't come up, Lauren Conner's Airs, which I just, that's like my favorite Lauren Conner's record.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. There's that. And there's one other thing who I actually really want to talk about her, Jessie Mae Henful.
Oh yeah. 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 So that one I was excited. Cause that was new to me. Like she was new to me. I wasn't. And what was it? The song you mentioned, Eagle Bird.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's great.
She is awesome. So, I don't know. Should we talk about Lauren Conner's first and then her?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Lauren Conner's is, we talk are. About somebody who like does so much with, I don't say so little, that's so sure, but it's like somebody who just picks all the right notes.
Yes.
And like lets them have their space. And it just, I love Lauren Conner's. So I think I was like 16 when I first heard Lauren Conner's. It was 16 or 17. It was Moon Yin, I think, was the record. Mm. Which I still love, but Airs is like a perfect record. But I remember hearing that and I never heard anything like that before.
Mm.
And was just like, what? and especially like early, I'd only been playing guitar for like 5 or 6 years and was like, oh, there's so much other possibility.
Yeah, there's this whole other thing you can do with it.
Yeah.
The Airs that I had on the list, that was actually kind of backup for What Song Makes You Cry.
Yes.
They're also, you know, I ended up not saying it because Airs is, it's a lot of things. It's not just that, but there's something about the spaciousness and the patience and the simplicity of the music, and his sound on that. It's like this really pretty clean tone.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just so captivating.
Yeah. It's like music that it feels like it just makes everything stop. Like anytime, even when I was like kind of prepping for this, and I've listened to Airs a million times, I was like, all right, I'm going to listen to like Airs 3, especially oh my God. I even think about it and I get a little emotional, but it's, you have to just stop and listen to it. You can't do anything else because he holds you in the palm of his hand.
It's true.
Beautiful.
That was on repeat at the beginning of the pandemic for me because everything stopped.
Yeah.
Know? And it was the perfect music for that. It's the perfect music for a lot of things. But it was really, really suited that situation.
Yeah.
One thing with Lauren, I've gotten to play with him a couple of times since then, like in the last few years, and he's the sweetest guy and super, you know, he struggles health wise and stuff.
Right.
He's so committed to the music and wants to play as much as possible. And like you said, he uses limited tools. He just has his guitar and I think a Boss distortion pedal and a Boss reverb pedal times that I've played with him. And I still don't know how he gets so much out of that. Like he'll do a thing where he pats with his right hand, but it just sounds huge. And he's really just like barely touching it. And like, wow. Like he just looks like he's like affectionately patting the strings, but there's like this wall of sound all of a sudden. And then he brings it down to nothing. You know, I've never seen anyone play quite as big a range with that few tools.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Jesse may have. Yeah.
Yeah. So that song Eagle Bird is on a record that came out, I think posthumously called Run, Get My Shotgun. And everything on that record is great. Eagle Bird is the last song. And I wanted to say that as another most romantic song.
Yeah.
Cause it's about her partner who's an eagle bird and we're going to fly away together. And it just has these beautiful lyrics. But she's like a hill country blues person. So north of the Delta, and that has its whole own style. Yet, you know, another style from like a small area in Mississippi, but it's a really distinct style. She's just, I wish more people knew about her because she's the real deal and only passed away in the last 10 years, maybe like 2010 or 2012.
Wow. Yeah. When I was getting ready for that, I was like, there's so much out there, but it's like, how has this passed me by for so long? And so I'm really, this is why I love fucking doing this show. Cause I'm like, all right, I have all this cool stuff now that I get to like go learn about. And,
cool.
You know, there's never, I don't know, people there's always, and kind of back, like sometimes music just you miss it for a long time, but it finds you at the right time. And that's like, that's okay. Like, that's okay.
Sure. It gives you things to look forward to. There's always another layer to get into.
Yeah. There's never, anybody who's like, oh, there's just no music. It's like, that's a you problem. Like there is always something amazing and new that you haven't heard to discover. So
sure.
Well, this was an absolute blast. I'm so glad we finally made it happen.
I am too. I am too. Thanks for making it happen, Brad. Seriously. Right. And thanks for the whole podcast. I mean, I listened to a couple episodes and it's just really great.
Thank you. It's been, it's been the best idea I've had in the last few years. So I'm like sticking with it. And we have, and the good thing is like, there's a whole second version now that called the remix, which is all new questions. So I can have you back sometime.
Oh, cool.
I did the first one of those. Like it was started the year with it with, Jeff Tobias. I don't know if you know Jeff.
I know Jeff. Yeah. Oh, cool.
He was the first ever guest on the show. And so he's now, anytime I'm like, have a new iteration, it's like, all right, got to call Jeff.
He's first up in the.
Yeah. He's like, he's the guinea pig every time. And he's game. So, but this was awesome. The Circular Train is out now on on Bill's label. How do you say it? I never say it right.
Palilalia.
There's all those L's that throws me off.
It's confusing. Yeah. He claims he only named the label that because the domain name was available. Like, okay.
I don't know if it'll happen, but I'm determined to get Bill on this damn show.
I'm sure it'll happen.
Okay. Anyway, everybody, buy the record. Go see Ava when you're going to be on the road a lot this year. And yes, there'll be plenty of opportunities. And yeah. Once again, a million thanks to Ava Mendoza for taking time out of her very busy schedule and doing this. And it was a blast. God, and some, man, she's got great taste. What can you say? I was really, my favorite part of that was the Kaiji Haino, Alice Coltrane conversation connection. Because, you know, that's like the two heads of, I don't know, it's like my two all-time favorites right there. So, yeah, that's no wonder that I'm so drawn to Ava's music because she loves them too. So, I mean, who doesn't? But, you know, Ava gets it. I don't know. Anyway, The Circular Train is out now on Bill Orcutt's Palilalia. God, Palilalia. I always want to say Palilalia, but I'm pretty sure it's Palilalia. God damn it. I can't. Anyway, it's out now. Link in the show notes. Check out her
playlist also in the show notes. And as mentioned, the head of the show, top of the show, please leave a rating review if you like the show, like the podcast. Patreon.com/VoxDigitalis. You can, for as little as $3 a month, you support the cause, you get the episodes a little bit early, and you get extra because you get the, there's a whole Patreon section. So that's it. I'll stop. Until next time, y'all, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.